Just a little bit about my background. I have an undergraduate degree in math and computer science from the University of Rochester. Immediately after that, started working on web stuff at a college about 20 miles to the west of Rochester, New York, at a public institution as their lone full-time web professional, really. So as you're talking about the web shop of one, that was me. We finally hired a couple of people, and at least one other staff person is here with me at the conference today, so it's good not to be alone. But still, when it comes to technology, I'm really the head of the web unit at Rockport. So dealing with the technology issues as they come up and keeping things up to date is really what fell to me. And so I hope to take you through a change that we made about 18 months ago with respect to our setup, so that if you're faced with something similar, you can maybe take some of the lessons I learned as part of this process and apply them to your own situation. So just a brief look at where we are going today. I want to give you a sense of the server setup that we began this process with, how we accomplished the transition without really any significant downtime, more than a few seconds during the process, what our new production environment looks like, how we kind of fell into a new pre-production environment that was better for our setup, and talk a little bit about change management, how we now work on projects before and after this arrangement, or how this new setup helps us really. And then a little bit about future plans if we have time in terms of what we hope to be moving to in the future, in terms of, we have a pretty decent setup, but the pieces that we think are missing along the way. So to take us back to 2009, what we had was a setup. You guys use permanent markers on this board? We seem to be having a minor technical difficulty. So this setup was essentially on a Sun box. Now, Sun, I guess, maybe doesn't exist so easily anymore. But we were essentially handed off a machine. It was coming off another project. They said, "Well, your current hardware was end of life about, 6 months ago. Let me want to give you this new box." Well, thanks for telling me that first, but without any real thought as to where we wanted to go longer term, their easy solution was to give us, more hardware than we'd ever need. So we went from a 250 to a 450, which was really overkill for our web server, but hey, the box was supported. It never went down. We get nice fast response from Sun to get us back up and running. We were running Solaris 10, which allowed us to use zones, or that's Sun's virtualized environment within the OS at the time. I don't think we were really playing around with any of their other fun features like ZFS or things like that, but at least we were up to date on the OS on our current, or then our current platform. However, we didn't use any of the tools or services with respect to Apache that Sun provided. What we found is that the versions of what Sun provided through their own OS were really out of date and didn't seem to be as easily configurable in terms of the type of environment and the modules with Apache that we needed in order to run our environment. And so really from the start, when we first switched to Unix, which was about 6 months after I got to Brockport for the web server, that we've been running on an environment that was essentially compiled by me. Something our sysadmins apparently didn't want to get into at the time, or I'm not sure how that fell to me, but I guess I did enough compilation in college that I was managed to pull it off. And so it ends up being a platform that we were running on. Is anyone still using Apache 1.3 out there? Thank God. That was one of those things that we just never had a solid reason to upgrade from, and the prospects of 2.0 or 2.2 were just out there in terms of, well, I don't know how different all these things are going to be, and rather than learn it, it seems to be working for us. So this project was one of those many things that had to change as we move forward. Anyone still using MySQL 4 or PHP 4? A couple maybe. I think that there was four people I heard from RIT here, and last I heard that institution was still running PHP 3. So there is still hope out there for people, and some of these upgrade projects really depend on how much of an installed base you have out there. We also used ModPerl, and we used that to really just do some filtering on all our pages. We used the server-side include implementation that was part of ModPerl, along with some other tools that I'll get into, one of the tricks that we did that we were kind of pulling off with the ModPerl setup to dynamically change a page as it was being served, in order to help facilitate testing of the new environment. So we had two boxes in our old setup, and I'll just draw with my very basic diagrams these two virtual boxes. We had the box that faced the web, and we had the box that people updated their web pages to. And so we called the production server Bender, and the testing box, or the box that people uploaded stuff to, we called Flexo. I happen to be a fan of Futurama, and so I stole the names and we used that for this particular project. In terms of Bender, again, our primary web server, we didn't have a separate database server. We just ran MySQL on the same system. We figured, hey, it'd cut down on latency, and it really was never overwhelming the box that we had. And on our user account machine, where people FTP'd to, we figured keeping the server off the same machine added a level of security to the setup. We did share, however, the production web folder between the pre-production and the production system, or the FTP system and the production system. And so that's the mechanism within zones, where you can actually share a directory between two of the different setups that are zones in that setup system. And that's how we had that set up. Unfortunately, that caused us a particular problem. About a year prior to this, we had adopted a PHP MVC framework, Model View Controller, called CakePHP. And we had that install split up into three pieces so that every Cake application that we wrote didn't have to have a copy of that framework. We had one common location for the framework. We had the app files, which lived in a folder that wasn't accessible from the web. And we had just a fragment of code left to tie those pieces together that was what was in the public web files, along with any other images or files or whatnot that get put up with part of that system. And that really caused us a problem, because our testing system was the same as the system that people uploaded files to in production, and those folders were the same. And so if you're in a web application and you're uploading folders to your production directory, and the production directory is different in your testing system and your production system, that's the problem that we ran into over and over again when we were deploying applications, that we had to change a setting in a file somewhere. We already had a file segmented off in terms of database configuration so that our production system wouldn't be talking to our pre-production database. So we exported that out so that when we migrated things over, we wouldn't copy the file in the web auth directory, so that the copying from production to pre-production to work or vice versa, you're never changing the database credentials. Even though we had that set up in place, they can kind of get over this by just putting a constant in that file. We had problems because, again, we weren't being consistent about our development at that point. So we knew we needed another development environment that would be more like our production environment. It ended up being one of the bonuses we got during this process. Another interesting observation that I really have to mention at this point is we didn't have a clear separation of responsibilities when it came to the system administrator group. I'm in IT, and the systems group is in IT. I report to the CIO. They report to a manager of systems and networking, which reports to a director, which reports to the CIO. So different levels of organization there. And they were very interesting in their perspectives on things, like the website not being a critical piece of the college's infrastructure. That, if the website's down, they somehow thought that the president's office wasn't going to be screaming until it was back online. So things like letting the support on our hardware expire and not really telling me until after the fact, or things like that where the communication wasn't great. We weren't really putting a lot of intentionality into the system support of the web. It was just, we're going to give you whatever hardware we have left over at the end of the day. So I think that being one problem. How we segregate the duties, being a techie and being able to go in and make the changes to systems with root on these boxes is helpful and streamlines a lot of things. But when we talk about segregation of responsibilities, that really shouldn't be in my plate. That should be the systems guy's job to take care of, and they can give me tools to do what I need and not much more. So the segregation, that's changed this new system. The systems guys, while they didn't want to be responsible for compiling the web server, were complaining at times about the being out of date on patches that were available to the Apache configuration. And looking and reading through those release notes that happened when we do that, that was, you know, a judgment call that I could make because I knew what services and features of a patch we were using. So if there's a security error in a feature that we're not using, that's not a critical patch for us in our environment. So there was some tension there that we were experiencing as part of our wonderful relationship. And as a division or a unit of the college, we really decided that Linux was the future. We had really bitten, I guess, the virtualization bug, saying we can save energy, we can save resources by having common hardware and a virtual image that we can move stuff between as resources dictate. So that was something that we had, you know, finally really thinking about our platform, we had embraced something and it seemed to be the way to go for us. So when it came to the transitional period, it was really clear to me that the first thing we had to move was the databases. And the real reason for that was if you move everything at once, then you have a real transition problem. Because you'll have a copy of the database on one server and a copy of the database on the new server. And how do you affect that transition when you're talking about DNS resolution percolating out to the world? And that can take a couple days sometimes to do. So what we happened is instead of the database server being on the same box, we developed a new production system for databases off to the side. And instead of the databases being here, we connected them to the new box over time. We transitioned and staggered that transition as resources allowed. So we stood up the new server for MySQL on our Linux VM, and it came to once we got it up and running, and we would start moving our production systems over, essentially our databases over one at a time. We had 72 on the system, and like I think most web applications, although that's probably declining really, but in our setup it was almost universal, I think at the time, that most of the web applications that we had, the public side of them were read-only. And so the cutover ends up being one of really a seamless transition. You change a configuration file and all of a sudden you're reading from the new database server. So right on the administrator, if you take down the administrative side for a couple minutes while you do a transition, that's not really gonna, in most cases, seriously affect your institution and how you operate. And so that got us to the process through which we would migrate a typical application, you know, cycle, wash, rinse, repeat several times. So we disable administrative access so we could actually have a static database to move. So if its database is not changing anymore, then that makes it easy to migrate it and move it from one system to another. As part of this end of this process, we started creating accounts. So a lot of the web applications, out of convenience, of course, followed that one adage where you have one administrator account. Rather than create separate accounts for every application, you just give the whole world to every web application that you have. So any database errors or coding errors or SQL injection, you can pretty much own the database server. Luckily, that never happened. And as part of this process, we created read-only and read-write accounts with very, you know, restricted and minimally necessary permissions, such that as we were going through this process, we were improving the security of our web applications. So when we went and we migrated, we created the accounts as well. So once we created the accounts, then we can take the public application, the world read-only application, and change the configuration file. So that instead of reporting to the local host, we're now going to try and connect to that new database server. So that's what we did. And then once we've got that working and confirmed that it works, then we can move the administrative site over so that that is also connecting to the new database server. And then finally, once we have it configured right, we can turn back on access, change the htaccess file to let anybody in who has, you know, then let the application determine who can access it. And then we have one of our databases migrated. So of those 72 databases, when you get it down to a script, in essence, this process becomes pretty painless because MySQL comes with tools that allow us to essentially dump the database file, dump the database into a SQL file that you can then read on another MySQL box to import all that data. So the database is fixed. We run a command that will, essentially a one-liner, that will migrate all the data from old box to new and then put it in a shell script to go out and create your accounts and those other things. And then all of a sudden we have migrated a database pretty easily. And those 72 databases weren't really as bad in the end as I thought. And I didn't really have a good sense of this at the time. But as we went through, it turned out it was really an opportunity for some spring cleaning, because we only moved 39 of the databases in the end, because those were the only web applications that we had at the time operational that we had to move. Those 17 of the databases outlived their projects. So we went and did something quick, and it solved the problem. And then the problem was over, but the database was never retired. And so in some cases, we were contacting departments from projects for satisfaction surveys from 2002 or something, saying, do you need this data? If so, I'll send you the Excel file, CSV file. If not, it's gone, as of thus and such a date. And some of them we contacted and sent along, and some of them didn't want it anymore. So 17 of those databases never had to move. It turns out 9, and this is probably not too unusual, though I was surprised that number was so high. 9 projects that we started, we created a database, maybe had some tables, started writing some programs, and then we never really finished the project. So either priorities changed or we went about it a different way, and these databases were still around, so they were gone. Turned out we had 6 databases related to the association here. Most of those might have been either registration data, or there was an annual survey I used to do for the conference in terms of salary stuff and how units are organized and where people are and those types of things. And those systems, those databases, we migrated to the association. The association finally had its own server space, and we could just move those stuff, and we didn't have to worry about keeping those around. And then we got one for free. One of those 72 tables was the MySQL table, which is where things like permissions are stored. So as we were migrating the tables over and creating new databases and creating new users, the MySQL stuff kind of happened automatically. And so the databases just migrated to the live system, and things were pretty smooth sailing. And that's one of those things that we made a decision early on. While we don't have a really robust and sound development environment, the fact that we had configuration files for our systems, we don't have to change each and every single bit of the program. We change one central config file, and then our permissions change throughout the application. So when we go in and change, we didn't have to change 10 files in an application to migrate and change what database server it was connecting to. We had to change, in most cases, one file and got them all. So once we had the databases set up, it really became time we needed to test, get stuff moved over to the new server, and test it out. Before I move on to that, I seem to recall I may have forgotten to say something I usually say before my presentations, which is, if anyone has any questions at any point, feel free to interrupt me. So raise a hand, get my attention, shout out, hey Steve, we'll try to get to that. I would like to, however, now pause and ask if there are any questions about that database migration process. Pretty straightforward? Okay, then I'll move on. So moving the, and really starting to build a new environment, I'm color coding here so you can follow along. The blue is our really building our new environment one step at a time. So we wanted to build our new environment. And there were lots of differences. We went over the version changes before. ModPerl connecting to an Apache 2.2 server. We had all the programs that we wrote in PHP 4 or old versions of Perl end up being migrated over to the latest and greatest versions. Were there any issues that we were going to encounter? We were anticipating some serious problems with our Cake PHP framework, and that some of the naming conventions when you use PHP 4 are different from when you use PHP 5. And so we had to work through some of those. And then the other thing we were really sensitive of when we were testing this system is that we really didn't want to disrupt our normal database. We wanted, if the Office of College Events was going in and updating and making changes, test changes to the web system to make sure they all work, we don't want them entering that test data into our production database. So we wanted to really build our new web server, but at the same time let it play off and play against the really a test copy of the database, so that we wouldn't have problems with them going in and testing stuff and then breaking the live website or putting garbage information into the live website. So what we did, really, as at a point in time, is we made a day, and then we said, okay, we're going to copy all the data over to our new production system. That, however, creates a certain other problem, but we'll get into that in a second. So once we have a copy of the system over, then it said, okay, how do we access the database? I'll use red to represent our new development environment, which I guess spoils a little something. But we'd already moved our database once. And we moved it onto a modern architecture, Linux 5, MySQL 5. And we could easily, now that we're in a virtual environment, clone it. So that's what we did at first, is we cloned it. Then the challenge becomes, okay, eventually your data gets stale. It's no longer as useful being a two-month-old copy of your production database. And so not only did we clone it, but we started a nightly process through which we would copy over the most recent version of our production database into our pre-production system. We understood that, well, that process, we might want to make some changes along the way, so we know we're on the testing system. So we had added an event to the events calendar for the current day saying that this is the test database. We would add an event to our homepage database to add the announcement that, oh, by the way, you're on the test system. You're pulling from the test database. So we cloned the existing server. We did an rsync process to synchronize the data. We added data to customize it. We adjusted the host fields in the MySQL database. So all the permissions on our production server were pointed at our old production, our production database server pointed at our old production web server. And if we want this server to be able to connect to the database server, then we need to rewrite the MySQL tables. There are about five of them in the MySQL database that have a host field. And so we wrote a script that every night when it backed up the database, it would change the host over so that instead of having permissions on the production system, we're establishing permissions to the web system, the new environment that we were then testing. And then finally, we were aware of the fact that, well, we could just redirect all traffic on the testing web system by changing all those configuration files to point at this test copy of the database. But that creates a certain problem that when we want to go live, all of a sudden we're rewriting another 70 configuration files along the way. So rather than do that, we just did an OS hack, and so that when this server was trying to look and connect to that server, the OS would redirect it so it would connect to the test system. So that when you went to the test web server, it was thinking it was connecting to the production system, but it was really the OS did a redirect to the test system. And so that allowed us to have our web, stand up our test web environment so that it was only connected to the test database and only could connect to the test database. And the administrators of applications could then go in and test them and make sure that there were no problems that they encountered. And we really did push most of our testing onto the end users of our web applications. So again, we had the PHP upgrade to deal with. As part of the environment, we decided we were going to expire at least one of our Apache modules from 1.3 rather than try to convert it to someone that's compatible to Apache 2. And so a mod auth external it will allow you to run an arbitrary program to do an HTTP authentication process. And so we rewrote that with a mod perl program. And also, we were essentially doing what we could do with LDAP, and so we used mod LDAP too. I said we already talked about how we involved the application owners with the process of reviewing their own applications. And one of the critical pieces was we really had to put out fires, that when things were broken, we had to get the new system up and running because it's on expired hardware or pretty close to expired. And so that's one thing that we really did concentrate on was, and being a small enough shop we could do this, is halt the production for a month on anything new, and then just go through and fix identified problems. And I have student staff that also does programming for me, and so they were also involved in making sure the applications were working and doing some of the testing as well. And when they weren't doing more routine HTML updates, they were fixing the applications that may have been breaking in the new setup. And then, of course, we didn't want to launch the website with month-old data, and so we also started a synchronization process that would copy from our current any changes made to our current production site to the soon-to-be production site. Finally, the last new piece of our production system was really we needed to replace was that user access. And so the box to which people FTP'd, or in this case, secure FTP'd now, we need to get those copied over. Previously, we had just been creating user accounts with separate passwords that may have been not as good as we'd like them to be, but they were separate passwords, and so people would check them off to remember them in Dreamweaver, or routinely forget them and need them reset. And so what we did was, since we had this new environment that could easily integrate with LDAP and our authentication environment, we said, well, we're going to get rid of all local accounts, or at least any that we can, and we're going to migrate them to a standard LDAP authentication with our net IDs. And so one of the challenges or observations or benefits of that process was that when we initially set up the accounts, they would be the same logins, would be just different passwords. And so it was fairly easy to walk that walk to get things transferred over to the new environment. And our system administrator team really worked on this for the most part to get the new setups to work. And then finally, the big day arrives. We set up our new environment. We've got it all to work. And it came time to start pointing the world instead of pointing at our old server to point at our new web server. And so what did we do? The first thing we did, and having sat through a project management session earlier at this conference, it really drilled home this point. Communicate. You need to really talk to people. They need to be aware that, oh, by the way, your Dreamweaver configuration is going to have to change. Oh, by the way, it's going to be integrated and combined with your LDAP, your NetID password. And your things are going to be different. You need to pay attention. You need to let us know if, you need to be doing your testing and let us know if there are any problems that you encounter in your sites, whether they're applications or just flat HTML. So when it came time for the weekend rollover to happen, we cut off access to FTP, so they couldn't make changes to their sites anymore. We did a final synchronization of files so that any final changes were reflected on the new system. And duplicate production database host permissions. So what we needed to do was change the permissions on this server, or rather add permissions for this one, because these were different names. This was Bender, and this was we didn't use names anymore, WWW1, they called it. And so we had to duplicate every permission from here, so that this server could talk to that database, because it didn't have to do that before. And in fact, we didn't want it to in case something was configured wrong. And so those didn't exist until the point where we made that migration. And then we removed that etc host hack that we did that was making the system think that was a production database, so that all of a sudden our new web system was talking to the same database as the old web environment. And then the big moment. We changed the DNS entry to the new IP address and let that propagate throughout the world. And then once we did that, we essentially changed the DNS record for this box so that the connections would be made on campus to that new machine. So the pages with changes would happen the same way. And then once the project was done, we would let people know let people know that they could go in and change their sites again. We then turn off the new system, and turn off the old system as those hits went away, as those hits went to zero. So the propagation, the 2 weeks or 2 days or whatever it takes for the DNS to reach the world. But at this point, we had migrated all the production stuff off of our old environment, but we still had some things on our other server, that user server, the development, the testing stuff. So, I mean, we weren't really done because we couldn't turn off the old machine and be done with it. So what we realized when we had gotten to this point was that, oh, we already have half of our new environment done because we had already had that testing server. We already had the database stuff being copied over on a nightly basis, which really provides a wonderful point of opportunity for you to test a new application with your current data, as opposed to have to generate something new and unique for your testing. And so what we had to do was turn on a development server. And essentially, rather than split the user access from the main production, we really didn't intend to give out any access to the server beyond the web group, beyond the web team. So it didn't really make sense to worry about the segmentation of roles and people potentially hacking this box. It's certainly possible. No system is impenetrable. But what we really thought was, it was just one extra layer of complexity. While it wasn't 100% like the current environment, we didn't think it would have any real production level differences. And so we had one development box that we stood up. And this time, though, we decided that it wasn't worth cloning everything. That taking an entire copy of the website, all the HTML, all the images, all the other cruft that is part of our web presence, really wasn't worth it. The flat HTML files, we really didn't think we needed a production environment for. And the applications, well, we're standing up an environment that is as identical as we can make it to the production environment. So what we did was we moved our applications, we moved our CGI bin, we made a copy of that, we moved the cake stuff, and then as we worked on anything else, we would refresh it. So we would just build a copy of what's in production in our development environment, do our testing, do our programming. It's all against this testing database. And then we would deploy that system to production as we were confirmed that our changes were made. So we decided not to copy everything when we made that change. We did, however, adjust the process through which we were cloning our database server over time. So we had to change what you have here. You have access to the production system here in the host configuration stuff for MySQL. Here we had to update that again because it wasn't coming from the production system. It was coming from the testing system. So that was just an automatable thing that we ran every night. Whenever we built anything new, we would add this PPRD extension just so we know that we're doing a new database. It's a database that doesn't exist in production yet. And we deploy it to production, and we change the name of it. And then we go back, and we change the name of it, the database that the application is configured to here, and then delete the PPRD version of it. In terms of modifications to schemas, I mean, how often when you change a web application do you have to actually change the database that underlies it? I'd say a lot of times when you're adding new functionality, you have to add some place to store that new functionality, so that's often. So what we did is we also automated the changing of the database so that whenever we did our copy over here, what we did was we would run a variant script. So we would run a SQL to change the database the way that we wanted to do when we rolled the new version into production. So that meant we got a test of that upgrade every day until we rolled that change into production. So another benefit is that the process through which we upgrade our applications becomes more robust. And it was really a benefit that we got from this project that we really didn't expect, but it just happened to be one of those things we thought about along the way that made a whole lot of sense. How good am I on time, John? About 10 minutes. Well, I could take you into a quick tour of our QuickReg system here, just to show what I have here is this is, we have a web calendar. A lot of people, it turns out, needed some kind of mechanism to register people for things. And after a while, taking care of email just seems to be a challenge when you could just store it in a database. So we created a generic registration system that you could configure or toggle what fields you turn on and off, but would otherwise kind of do the types of things you need to do in a basic simple registration system for one of the examples I have here is our Center for Excellence in Learning and Teaching. And, I mean, the application front end is not one that people usually saw. What they saw over here is a list of events in this office. And so you want to attend an event, you click on the link, you get the description, and, well, that's not as usable as I would like it to be. But we could go in and click to a registration. In this case, this event is full because we also embedded capacity planning and turned that on in the system. So I can't actually register for that particular event here, but it would bring up a form as part of that process. So we went through our initial version of that application was one that would not actually have any optional fields. A field was either on, required, or so one of the things we did is we added a third option was on but not required. And that involved changing the database. It involved adding new fields that we wanted to add. It involved adding checks, like we can require someone log in with a college net ID in order to process the registration. And we even make a workaround so that I can, with a net ID, log in and register someone else. So if I'm a secretary registering a chair, that's possible too. So what we did was, in this case, we had a student working on it. We copied everything over on the application side from our production environment to testing, made a whole lot of changes. We asked people to test it. And as part of that project process, identified, okay, this was working how people wanted to. We needed to tweak this because it wasn't as easy to use. And so we kind of went back and forth with the people who used the system to identify what those core needs were. And they could go into the test system and test it and play around with registration data without having to worry about corrupting, again, the production system. And then, anything that they happened to do during one day was gone the next because it was overwritten by the daily, nightly feed. And then once that process was done and the semester was approaching, we put out that final call for testing and didn't hear any bugs, and so we rolled that into production by that. Essentially just copying, this is what we did. Backed everything up in case something happens so that we could go back. Temporary need to disable the application so people can't register to a database that we're seriously about to change. We would change the databases in production using that script that we would previously running every day in our test environment. We would copy the application update to the production server, so all that code that we had been changing, we would copy over to the server. We have certain programs that accept code or accept files, upload files from people. We need to preserve that in the public website of things, but mostly it's copying over, replacing existing content. And then test it to make sure it works. And then that same day, we can't run those SQL updates again on development once they're made in production because they will all conflict with changes that are already there. And so we needed to remove that fragment of SQL code that was running every day to update the application in development because we had rolled it into production. Very briefly, some changes we expect to be making. I mean, VMware, it seems to be an environment that's working well for us. And we don't, outside of some capacity issues and some of the computational load on the web servers and what it does, it really ends up not being too bad. We don't think right now to spawn off a second web server, but as traffic continues to grow, we expect that some kind of caching proxy or some kind of second web server is something that we're going to need to invest in to keep our infrastructure capable of handling that. And so by being able to copy just one web server to a second one over time, that really allows us the capacity to grow and handle those unexpected events that might happen. And that's one of the things we expect to happen at some point in the not too distant future. In terms of versioning, we don't right now, other than the copies that we have in lots of different places, have a robust versioning system, CVS or Subversion or something else. And what seems very logical is to have some kind of other system up there that can deploy things to the production environment or to the development environment with just some tools that we develop as part of that process. And so it's something we expect to explore. We know it's something that we're missing. It's one of those aspirational things that we want to be working towards is a more robust development environment to really smooth out any processes or programming issues that we've had. And that is the conclusion of my presentation. I'd like to open the floor up again for questions. Remind everyone to fill out TPR6 on their evaluation forms. And thank you all for coming. But if there are any questions, questions. Okay. The question was, what Linux environment, two-part question, what Linux environment are we running now? We ended up being Red Hat Enterprise 5 as our primary environment for all the servers that I talked about here on the new side are Red Hat Enterprise 5. In terms of the different environments and challenges of upgrading between Linuxes, I think you have the capacity to enter a lot of the same problems that we had going here from different versions. As the more similar that you can keep the systems, I think the fewer problems that you'll have. So if you're moving to the same, keeping the same version of Apache, keeping the same version of your database, keeping the same version of your programming languages, that will help minimize the challenges as you would move forward from that one environment to the other. I would suspect that, I mean, I was honestly surprised during this process to how much worked. I mean, despite that we were going through so many versions, we were able to isolate and solve these problems through the process which tracked them, which we have job tracking, at least, on my campus. So those were things that, that helped. So I would definitely have a testing opportunity and make sure that you really affirmatively look at all your applications. And if you don't have good documentation in terms of who your primary customers are for each of your applications, to really develop that, and I would encourage you, like we did, to involve them in the testing of their new applications on their new environment. So you're going, you said, from Ubuntu to Red Hat, you think? So with it, well, I'd say if you're moving at the behest of, say, a central IT, it sounds like, that you should involve them in the process of defining whose roles and responsibilities are whose. I mean, I was, as I mentioned, building the web server from scratch, and we went to essentially a packaged version in Red Hat. And so with Apache in Red Hat, you can just install using yum a new package, and it will handle all the dependencies for you. So if you install, you know, PHP 5 with the graphics utilities, that has certain implications, I think, based on the shared libraries in terms of not being shared secure. So you need to, you may be sure you're using the pre-fork model of Apache 2 and not the one that uses threads. And so, I mean, it handles a lot of those dependencies for you. I was shocked at how seemingly robust the Red Hat package manager was. But I mean, if you're moving to that environment where you're being supported and they're kind of forcing your hand in this, what I would do is I would definitely sit down with them and develop at least an MOU informally in terms of who's going to be responsible for what. And again, the most similar that you can make the environments, the better. A lot of the stuff that will probably be different between the two systems is going to be stuff that you won't have to worry about anymore. So, other questions? Yeah. The question was, why did we choose Linux as opposed to some other Unix-like environment? And I think that would be one of those decisions that was made above my pay grade. I think that they liked the concept of Linux. I think that they were seeing that that seemed to have the most development energy and thinking behind it. I think there was a desire to be a little bit less proprietary in terms of, you know, education, higher, head in the clouds, ivory tower, and really go with something that we could recruit system administrators to support. Because I think one of the other challenges we had around the same time is we were dealing with turnover in our system admin department. And I think we have essentially 2.5 system administrators, two of which had been with the department for probably under 2 years at that point. So with that type of turnover, it really becomes a problem if you can find a skill set to support that. I think that was kind of why we made that business decision. Probably there's some additional integrations and tie-ins with VMware that we were following other people's recommendations as well. SIG, okay, we're done. Thanks, everybody. They'll collect your evals at the door. TPR 6, thanks.